guys. Here we go. She Runs Ultras, episode number 178. I'm excited for you to hear this conversation between myself and Jessica Spissinger. She recently ran her first 50K, and without giving too much away, she's just so awesome. I think you guys are really going to resonate with some part or all of her story about her journey from not being a runner, really not identifying as an athlete at all back in the day, and coming full circle all the way around to running her very first 50K. And I don't want to spoil it, so we're going to get right into it. But first, I just want to beg for a little bit of forgiveness here. I've been really struggling, you guys, with trying to create a high quality podcast here with regards to the sound on my end. My little office here has a lot of hard surfaces, and I've tried so many different things. If you could have seen all the different iterations my office has gone through in order to try to record this podcast without having the sound reverberating, it's crazy. I bought sound panels off of Amazon and double-sided sticky taped them to the walls. They didn't hold, so I had to take them all down. I've put towels and blankets and pillows all around my office when I record to try and dampen the noise. That didn't really work. I got a new microphone. That didn't really work. So right before I hit record here, I was actually downstairs super gluing, or I should say, like, what's that spray glue, that mounting glue that you put onto a trifold presentation board? And if, side note, if you know what I'm talking about when I say trifold presentation board, you are my people, because these things don't really exist anymore. I had to go on a hunt for one of these things. And so that's what stands in front of me now. And I'm hoping that the sound for this podcast going forward is going to get better and better. But I do, again, have to beg for a little bit of forgiveness, because the audio that you're about to hear on my end is not my best work, but I wanted to send it out and let you guys listen to it, because Jessica's story is so amazing and so impactful that I just couldn't hold it back any longer. So hopefully you've saved this one. It's a long one for your long drive, your commute, your long run. So enjoy this conversation with newly minted ultra runner Jessica Spissinger.
So I am originally from the Adirondack area of New York State. So I grew up like in a town called Plattsburgh, kind of in that outer region by Lake Champlain. It's a very gorgeous area, and it's very much like near and dear to my heart, even though I haven't lived there full time officially since I've been like since I was 17. Currently live in Milton, Massachusetts, which is like the South Shore, essentially, of the Boston area. So that's where I've been for almost like the last 10 years, with multiple moves in between all over the place. But essentially, what got me into running has been like a very long, like wayward process. Definitely happened later in life. I was thinking back to like the very first official timed run I ever did in life. And I'm like, that was first DNF. And that must have been fourth grade, doing that like presidential fitness challenge. Did you ever have that?
Yes.
You have to run a time mile. You have to climb a rope. And I think maybe there were push-ups and sit-ups involved. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I think I blocked most of it out, but I do remember like tiny little gymnasium. And we had to do some crazy amount of laps in to make that mile. It was probably like 22 or something. Mm-hmm. And I was a little chunky as a kid. And I remember just trying, like, hauling around the laps, and like kids were like calling out, like, you know, all sorts of names and being kind of jerks. Uh-huh. And I just, like, got to this point where I was like, oh, I can't breathe. And I remember like stopping, and I'm like, I just can't. I'm like, what are you going to do? I'm like, I know this is the presidential fitness, whatever, but I'm literally just not going to do this run. So it's funny, because I always like think back to that moment. I'm like, it was just definitely not in the cards for me early on. And then as I grew up, like, I was very much in a town like so many others, I'm sure, where like sports are very predominant, but I was never naturally talented or gifted at them. My sister, meanwhile, was like captain of the swim team, like always like breaking swim records, like just this amazing athlete. And I was like kind of trying to find a way to like hobble myself along into like sports, but like nothing was coming really too naturally. I made it onto like the junior varsity soccer team my sophomore year. And I always will have this memory of having this like amazing goal. And then I turned around and I can still see my coach as if it's in slow motion. And he's like, no, because I had shot the goal into the opposite team's. And that was like the marking point for me where I was like, you know what? I'm done. I'm not doing any like organized sports anymore. And so for me, that was like it. And that was like high school. But around that same time, like I got more like into the idea of just like biking and like walking for like long periods of time. Mm-hmm. And I was not like a super healthy person. I wasn't trying to do that. I was definitely much more of like a hippie. So I'd be like, you know, biking to school and maybe I'd like smoke a quick cigarette before going in. So I was like not doing it for fitness by any means. But I was like, I'm like, I think that set the stage for my like enjoyment of like this long distance walking. I used to get on train tracks and just walk like 10 miles into town. And then like fast forward into college last year, I finally had to do, gym. It was a requirement and I'd been procrastinating it. And I took this class called like Fit for Life. And like for the first time ever, I ran and enjoyed it and it was amazing.
That's awesome.
So I was able to take that with me after I completed college. I moved to San Francisco and I started to just love to like run up and down the beach. I lived in Golden Gate Park and that is just such amazing, like fun area to like be running around. And so that kind of started to develop over time where I never thought of myself as being athletic when I did it, but I just enjoyed the feeling so much. And it wasn't around any kind of goal. I did do my first official road race at doing Beta Breakers. Did you ever hear of that race?
Yeah. Yeah.
Run like naked in it.
It's a wild race. Yeah.
The scene. I'm like, okay. So I did that just for like fun. I don't even remember anything about that except for running behind like, you know, old naked man's butt.
How that didn't scar you from like running forever.
Francisco energy is just so over the top.
Yeah.
It's awesome. And so I'm trying to like fast forward through like huge leaps because what wound up happening ultimately, fast forward another couple of years, where I had relocated to Chicago, I had met a guy. So I moved to Chicago to kind of find out about a guy. And something inside of me just was like, you know, like my sister had continued with her athleticism, which, you know, by those years had turned into her doing like marathons. And I kind of was like, I like to run. I could maybe like do this like running thing. And then I was like, I think I want to do this. But I had been such a like low-key not sports person all my life that it was like the idea for me to set out and be like, I'm going to run a marathon. I just would never put that forward. I would imagine like people would laugh at me and they'd tell me you could never do it. So I literally like marathon trained in secret.
I love it. How did you do that in secret without anybody really knowing about it?
Well, I was living in Chicago with my boyfriend at that time, who's now my husband. And you know, I was like doing regular runs, like maybe 3 to 4 miles here and there. And I kind of just built on it. And I may have told him and he probably just like knew and forgot about it. Like he was just not invested in my like running goals. It wasn't like, that wasn't something we ever shared. And like, I didn't really feel like I was trying to keep it from him, but it wasn't something that was like an active part. So I just like plodded along. And I don't know if you've ever been to Chicago, but it has this amazing like shoreline where you've got the city in the middle. And then like maybe, I think it's like 30 miles north and 30 miles south, there is this bike path, right? And so that was like my training for so long. And so I had picked up that book, like the Jeff Galway, I don't know, Run for Life or whatever his training book was. And that was the plan I followed. And I realized that like with walk breaks, I could do so much more than I had ever thought I could. And so that was like such a revelation. Like every time I went further than I had ever been, it was so exciting. And it'd be like 10 miles, it'd be like 15, it'd be like 18. And I was like, I never knew I could do this. And I was just like thrilled. I remember like being at home in Plattsburgh with like my dad and my sister. I remember my dad looked down, he's like, whoa, Jess, your calves are like as muscular as your sister's. What's going on? I'm like, oh, you know.
I'm found out.
But I like still didn't like fess up. And like, it was so funny. So just looking back, I'm like, I was so like covert about it. And then I signed up for this marathon that's like, it's not the Chicago Marathon. It's a Chicago Marathon where they literally take the marathon on that bike path. And it's a pretty like low attended event. So I wound up like running the whole thing, like kind of halfway, like pretty much by myself. And like I ran, walked it, and I walked away with like a pretty good time. I was like not trying for a time. I didn't even know what times meant. But I remember finishing it and they like wrapped me in that like silver wrapping that they do. And I was like, yay, me. And I like walked through the tent and I'm like, there's like nobody here because I didn't tell anybody that I was doing it. So I went home and like my husband, I think he was still in bed sleeping, and he has a daughter. So I had a little stepdaughter at the time who's, you know, his daughter. I was just the girlfriend at the time. And we like did some activity for the day. And it was like, I did not run a marathon. It was like, that just happened. And that was like my own little world.
So wait, like you got up and you didn't tell him you were going to run this race. You went and ran it and then came back and was like, hey, honey, I'm home.
I'm like, oh yeah, remember, like, I think I mentioned a marathon. I'm like, I just ran that.
That's so badass. You were just like, oh, I'm just going to do it by myself.
And like, I say that because the 50K I just did was such a different experience of that. So just to kind of put that in the background. But from there, I was like, hey, I just did a marathon. I told my sister and I told everybody. And I was like, wow, like I could do that again. And it definitely continued to be something that stayed with me. Just like I did wind up doing the Chicago Marathon a couple of years later after I'd had my own first child. So I had like I think my daughter was like about a year and my sister had like a year and a half year old, and she came out to Chicago and we ran that marathon together.
Oh, cool.
And that was such an amazing experience. And it's funny too, because like that day we like gave our husbands the babies and they like took them out, gave them McDonald's. We were like, aren't you going to like meet us? And like, as soon as we got done, we're like, we just did the marathon. We like never saw them along the race. Like,
yeah. I don't know where
we got, like, we did it. And they're like, yep, here's the babies. And then they ordered all this like fried greasy food. And we're like, we don't want to eat that. That's so gross right now. So like, again, the endings have always been, were kind of interesting.
Yeah.
And then after that race, should I just keep rambling?
Yes, absolutely. I love this. This is such a great story. I love hearing everybody's like progression because, you know, like you've listened to the podcast, like, and you were in the group, like everybody comes to it from a different place for a different reason, has a real different progression, you know, like some people to sort of juxtapose your story of telling no one, some people tell everybody, you know, so it's just interesting. I'm sure that there are people out there who are thinking, you know, maybe they haven't run a 50K yet. Maybe they haven't run a marathon or anything. And they're just like getting into running, but they're having that same sort of fear and apprehension that you were like, oh, I kind of want to do this, but I don't really want to tell anybody. I mean, I was the same way with my first 50K, like my husband knew. And that was because he was just like, he was in close proximity and he would miss me. He'd be like, where are you if you're not home for Saturday morning, like pancakes or whatever tradition we had at the time, right? So it was like, he had to know, like he was need to, it was like need to know basis only. But there are probably some people out there who don't have supportive friends or family or partners or spouses. And like, they want to do it, but they think they have to, you know, get everybody's buy-in and support. And what you've just proven is that you can on the DL train very covertly for a marathon and do it. And you don't have to make a big deal out of it if you don't want to, but like, I mean, make a big deal out of it for yourself, but you don't have to, you know, shout it from the rooftops in order for it to happen. So yes, of course, keep rambling. Tell us the whole story.
Okay. Well, that's been a spirit that has persisted for me over the years. But just to say, so I did that Chicago marathon. It must have been like 2008 or 9. And that was before like my life like totally dramatically changed. So basically at the time I was married, I had a little girl. I had my stepdaughter who was a teenager. We were living in Chicago. And then like I got pregnant again and I wound up getting pregnant with like an unexpected set of twins. And so that was like a really cool experience to have a set of twins. And like my daughter was very like close in age. It definitely threw the running for a wrinkle because I had been very successfully like stroller jogging with my daughter. I had this awesome like Bob jogging stroller. It was great. Totally manageable. Once I had three in a stroller, I'm like, it's just not worth it. I'm not. I'm sure some moms can, but I was like, nope, not going to do it. I'm like, the kids stay home and I'll go for like my 20-minute run or something at that time. So like during those years, like, you know, next couple years after the twins were born, like life got super busy. I would run a little bit as I can. I think I did like the Shamrock Shuffle in Chicago, which is like an 8K, but I was like not looking into any like big races. At that point, I was working as a clinical social worker, and I decided to go back to school to become a physician assistant.
Oh, cool.
So I went back to PA school, which is like 2 years of very intensive medical education, in which you really have like barely any time to like eat, breathe, let alone like take care of kids. So somehow I would like work in running here and then when I could. But before I graduated from my PA school, I actually got pregnant again, and it wound up being another set of twins.
Yay!
The last thing I ever expected at the time. And I, again, like running was like always kind of there here and there. But it was like not even really a thought during those years.
Yeah.
And so then I, you know, we wound up like having our second set of twins in Chicago. my stepdaughter was like nearing the approach of her completion of high school. I was like, I need some like backup with these five little children that I suddenly have. I'm like, I was finishing my PA school and I'm like, I don't know about like working here in Chicago when like we've always talked about going back to the East Coast. My husband's from the Boston area in Quincy. Mm-hmm. So we've got like, roots here. My sister now lives like in the Boston area. So once we the kids, we like relocated back to the East Coast, and that's where we've kind of been since. And so again, like during those years, it was like just trying to get our bearings, trying to like get all the kids like taken care of each day, maybe run a teeny bit exercise when I can. But I feel like when I look back to the fact that like I hadn't run a marathon or done any major organized racing since 2013, I was like, how did I survive all this time? Like missing out on this. And one of the things that had actually kind of come up in my life at that time was like getting really into like adult ballet and dance.
Yeah.
And that like took over and like was provided a very like satisfactory outlet. So I think I kind of kept with that over those years. And then pretty much consistently up until, I guess I would say, the pandemic. And in the pandemic, I was not someone who suddenly was like, oh, look, running. In fact, I was like, opposite. I was like the person who did not exercise during the pandemic. I was like, tried to do a little bit of the virtual ballet classes with the people who were like doing that studio. And I just really do it. I'm like, if I'm not in a studio, I'm just not doing dancing. And I just kind of scaled down to hunker down because like I had to do all the homeschooling for like all the kids plus my own job. And it was just like stressed all the time.
Just for context, because you breezed through it or I missed it. You had your first set of twins. And then how long after did you have the second set of twins?
So good question. So my first set of twins were 3 years old when the second set of twins were born.
Got it. Okay.
Yeah.
That's a lot of kids under five.
Yeah. Like we moved to Boston with five kids, 5 years and older and under. And they were just like these amazing little munchkins. They're like, I look back to those pictures. I'm like, you know, they were such little schmushkins, and now they're all like teenagers and like, you know, they got their own thing going on. But I'm like, I love teenagers. I think teenagers are awesome. The whole like toddler coming like close to like, you know, death all the time, not my thing. Like mobility without sensibility, no.
Yes. Yeah.
I literally like could not sit down because all my four twins, not to say this makes a difference, but all my four twins are boys. I have a single daughter and then I had four twin boys, and they are just like little active things all the time.
Yeah, I can only imagine. Just for context, my brothers are twins, but they're fraternal. They're not identical. And they are the youngest in the order. So it goes me, my sister, and then my brothers. And we were all like very close together, like around that 5 year mark. So I have like a little like glimpse into your life because there were four of us under five, but like adding another set. And like my brothers, when they were younger, were all over the place. So I can only imagine what having two sets of twin boys was like in your house.
I know. And it's like, it's one of those things that's like special and magical and like immensely intense and stressful and like super overstimulating, I think is like the biggest thing. Like I would have friends come over and it's like 5 minutes at my house. They'd be like, I'm overstimulated. And I'm like, oh yeah. Like that's like how we roll.
Yeah. Like, you're just so used to it, you know?
Come in and be like a child standing up on the counter, like, you know, rustling through things in the kitchen. There's like another one, like, I don't know, like pouring glue all over the floor. And we're just like, I didn't care about that floor anyway. You know, it's definitely taught me to like not be attached to material items. Like nothing less. I'm like, okay. Oh my God. But like, so I feel like the pandemic kind of marked a turning point though, because I kind of just gave up on the dancing, which had been an outlet. And then I got really into gardening And we live on this little house that's like up on a hill. So I did like so much like wheelbarrowing, and I was like, I'm going to build a patio. And I was like super active on that level. And I would see people like exercising at home or like running. I'd be like, oh, like, why are you even doing that? And then I finally got to this point, like kind of coming out of the pandemic, where I'm like, I actually do miss running. I want to like get going with something. And I don't even know if I posted something, but my biggest thing with running is like, as I started to ease it back into my life, I would find like the best hours for me during the day is like that 4 a.m. to 6 a.m. Mm. So that's before sleeping. That's like my safe time. Like so many moms I know like fall into that like route. And so I was all about running at 4 a.m. and I ran at 4 a.m. like many times in the dark all around the town, but I didn't love it. Mm. And so I think I finally got to this point where I like posted on like our local group, like, hey, does anyone else run early in the morning? And somebody posted back. They're like, I don't run that early, but like I'd run a little later if you want an accountability program partner. So we like both decided to do like a couch to 5K and kind of got back into running. And as soon as I did like my first 5K in like about 10 years, I was like so hooked back into running. And I'm like, I can't believe all these years have gone by and I've missed out on all these races. And my only thing had always been road racing. That's all I really know. That's all I had ever done. I didn't know much about the whole ultra trail world, but I did know that there was a thing called an ultra, which was a 30-mile run. And I'm like, you know what? I never want to run another marathon. I'm like, I've been there. I've done that. I'm like, that has no interest for me. But an ultra, like a 30-mile run, like that sounds amazing. I'm like, I don't know why that like just equated in my head, but it's just that novelty again of that excitement of like saying like, wow, like I've now like covered a ground, like a new distance that I had never covered before.
Yeah.
I had no like thought in my mind that like 30 miles of like an ultra is not a road race and that it's trails. Like that just did not equate. And then when I found out that like ultras are trail runs, I'm like, I still didn't really care. It wasn't so much like, oh, I want to run in trails. It was just like, I want to run 30 miles. And if trails are the way I have to do it, that's what I'll do.
Yeah. I love that. I love that you were just like, you skipped right over. You were like, I've been there, done that with the marathon. Now we're going to go and add some more mileage. And you got like excited. And I think like a lot of people can resonate with that too, right? You just get to a certain point where you've either exhausted the distance, like you've run all the races, and or you just do one and you're like, you know, you don't have a strong, you know, feeling one way or the other towards it, but you're like, I don't know, I guess I don't really want to do that again. What else is out there? I think that's how a lot of people end up in ultras, because they're like, what else is out there? Let's just, you know, look around and see.
And like, so like sometime around this time, so now we're like talking about like 2022. So I'm kind of like coming up into modern times here. And like, essentially like after the pandemic, you know, some of my kids have gotten sedentary, talking to the doctor, want us to talk to a nutritionist. A nutritionist is like, hey, you know, how about you get some exercise equipment for your home? And I was like, I was always of the mind that like, I didn't want my home to be a gym. I'm like, if I want to go to a gym, I'll go to a gym. I don't want a bunch of like fitness equipment, like collecting dust around the house.
Yeah.
But then she was like, you should get a treadmill. And I like, have always wanted a treadmill. And I was like, okay. I'm like, I went to my husband. I'm like, so it turns out we have to get a treadmill because our kids really need it. So I went like, I splurged on getting the Peloton treadmill. I didn't ever have a Peloton bike. I wasn't like into that, but I really like the idea of like coaching, because I'm in this point in life where I'm like, I kind of just need to be told what to do. Like I'm more creative, and now I'm like, I don't have the bandwidth. Just tell me what to do and I'll do it. And so I really love that like coaching platform. And so while I had been running outside a lot, like oftentimes listening to audiobooks or listening to whatever, I really got into like the fitness instruction, because like it helped me to be so much more mindful about what's going on with my breathing, what's going on with my form, like things I just had never really even given a thought to.
Yeah.
So the good thing about that is that I started like running more regularly and I got really into it, and I started to think about maybe having more ambitious dreams. But the other thing is, because I got so used to running on a treadmill, I stopped running outside. Mm. And so that became problematic when I like, you know, back in, this is October 22, I'm like, okay, I'm going to do another 5K. I'm going to see if I can run it as fast as I've ever run it. This is going to be exciting. And when I started to run, I started to realize that like, it was really different feeling, because I hadn't been practicing on the road. And I also started to realize that like, having had five kids, you know, I had some issues in the past where like I would run, I would like jump up and down and I'd have like a little leak, or like I'd sneeze and like, you know, you have a little bit of pee come out. And I'm like, yep. Okay, but I had gotten better about it. Like I think throughout all those years of doing ballet, like my abdominal and core got really strong.
Yeah.
But then after the pandemic, it did not. And so when I got back to running, like that wound up being like something I was like, I need to pay more attention to like my pelvic health. And I did this 5K and I was just like at the end of it, like drenched. And I'm like, crap. And I'm like, I would have gone faster, but I kept having to stop and pee. And that's where I was like, oh my gosh, like having the luxury of having a treadmill has also made it so that every time I have to go, I just go. I don't ever have to try to practice holding it.
Yep.
So come to the new year. And I was like, okay, I really want to run. I want to run long distances, but like having had five kids, I can't just like get out there and like do it as I did before. I need some like pelvic PT. So I looked into like getting the ball rolling with that. And I went on this walk with like a local friend of mine who runs like her own coaching program. She does like a lot of triathlon and open swimming.
Nice.
She's like, so, you know, she's like a very inspirational person. Her name's Adina O'Neill, just a shout out. Adina's been amazing. And she's like, so like, we're talking about like New Year's goals. And she's like, so what do you like have in mind? You know? And I'm like, I don't know. Like, I'm like, I don't want to put like a whole bunch of pressure, but you know how it is in the new year where you kind of like do want to come up with something and you're like, I don't know. Like, I just felt like I really did want to do something different. And I was kind of all over the place. And I was like, I definitely want to do an ultra one day. I'm like, I want to do like a, you know, 50K, but probably not right now. And she was like, well, why not? And I'm like, oh, I just can't because like this and that and that. But then like we like finished our little walk. And then around that time, I started to listen to your podcast. And I was like, yeah, this will be fun someday, someday, someday. And then I was like, that whole word, like she kept saying, like, why not? It like kept resonating back in my head. It was like, why not? Why not?
Like a little like, you know, like the angel and devil on your shoulder, like just chattering in your ear.
And so like then like, so much of like your podcast like spoke to me. I was like, I like binged your podcast. Like I think like a first couple of weeks sometime in January, or maybe it was like the end of December. It was like somewhere around that time. And I just started to get like more and more excited about the idea. And so many of the times when you were like, you know, don't just like dither around, like, you know, put a stake in the floor, like draw that line in sand, like just go for it. And I'm like, why am I making excuses? Like, what, you know? And I'm like, I waste tons of time. I'm like, I constantly feel like I have no time, but I'm like, I waste tons of time. And I'm like, I exercise all the time in a very like sporadic, but kind of like erratic way without any like form or focus to it. And I'm like, I realized like, this is something I can do. I want to do it. And I think I emailed you at that point. And I'm like, I heard you had like 10-week plan out there. And I'm like, I'm gonna look at that. And then like, you had this, like you had your, run your first 50K group open. And you amazingly, somebody, it was full, but somebody dropped out and I was able to come into it. And it was like such a great time. And I just remember when I, you know, it was either when I got like the 10-week plan, but I think it was more so when I made the decision and I got the 20-week plan, that it was like all these pieces in my mind that were all over the place, like just kind of like chinked into gear. And it was like chink, 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 chink. And suddenly everything just had like structure and organization in a way that I had been missing for so long. And it was just like really gratifying to realize like how much of that process is like supportive to me. And it doesn't have to be this like rigid end all be all of like following a plan. Yeah. But I realized like how helpful it was. And I had done like programs like the Couch to 5K and like things like that. Like I've always done well with having something in sight to work for. So yeah, so that's what brought me to you.
Well, I want to just touch on something real quick because I think it's super important that like you brought it up earlier, which is you get to a certain point, and I think everybody gets to this place at some time over the span of their life, and maybe they get there multiple times, but you just get to a place where, like you said, you just don't have the bandwidth to coach yourself and even to just have a little bit of structure and a little bit of guidance on where to focus your time, your attention and your energy is so helpful. And the other thing you said that I love was that you didn't think you had time, but then you like waste all of this time. And I feel the same way too. And I try to be good about it, but like I catch myself wasting time all the time. So I try never, ever to use the excuse, I don't have time, because I always just sort of have this running inventory in the back of my head, like, oh, but you know, you can't say you don't have time because you did this, this, and this that have nothing to do with any of your big goals, whether that's running or life or business or whatever. So it's like, we constantly go through these cycles, I think, of, you know, being really internally motivated and having the drive to train ourselves for certain things. But then on the flip side of that, you know, you might have five kids under the age of five and be a PA and like have a demanding just life in general. And this is where sort of giving over control or at least bringing in some more structure and a plan can really help you to free up a lot of your brain power. Cause I know that like the second you got that plan, you were like off to the races. It was so cool to watch you go because you were just like, and I did this and this and this. And I'm like, this is happening and this is so great. Like, I can see how this is. And it was just like so cool to like, you know, have you in the group. And then because you were giving all sorts of like amazing updates. And I was like, yes, this is like, you know, because when we traded emails, you were like, I just need some structure. Like, I need some help. I need just like you said before, just tell me what to do and I'll do it.
Basically. And the other thing, like, I remember saying that like helped me so much, and it was something you had said in your podcast, was how like you can like get lost in the sea of information out there. Mm-hmm. And like that's how I was feeling. I'm like listening to this podcast, listening to another podcast, and like I don't know, like when I listen, like people gravitate in different directions. Yeah. But like the podcast lining up so specifically to like what I wanted to do, and I felt like so much of what you were saying was like on my level and achievable. I was like, you know what? Like, I'm going to stop trying to figure it all out myself. Like you were saying, yeah, with the bandwidth situation, it's like one thing to coach yourself, but also just trying to process all the information because there's so much contradictory information out there. You can just lose like mine. I'm like, I just want to like go with somebody's experience who like has it and like kind of tune out the other stuff for a while. And it really did feel like so much mental space opened up in that moment.
That's awesome.
Yeah, no, that was so huge for me.
So what race did you decide to do? Give us like a little background on the 50K that you decided to do.
So I was super excited. I think I remember I wrote to you and I'm like, there's this like 50K in like April and it's like right next to me. And you're like, well, that's probably not like, you know, enough time. It's like a little bit close. I'm like, well, it's 16. I'm like, it's 16 weeks. And I remember when I did marathon training before, I did it in 16 weeks and that was fine. But then I was like kind of understanding the whole like process of going like 20 weeks. So I'm like, okay, so I started looking out at like races that were around then. And pretty much like there was a couple I could find. So this is kind of funny. So there was like the Vegan Power out in Western Mass. And then there was like the Gunstock in New Hampshire. And I don't remember if there were many others, but when I looked at like timeframes, school schedules, et cetera, those were the two I was landing on. And like, it's kind of funny, but my family is very carnivorous. And so I was like, I don't know if I can get them to go to a Vegan Power ultra with me.
That's amazing.
I've had times in my life where I was vegan, love vegan culture, love eating vegan, but raising a family full of meat eaters, not in the cards for me. So it's all good. But they're like, I'm like, that's just not going to work. There's something about that. I'm like, I can't, I just can't. So I'm like, Gunstock. My sister like actually has a place like near Lake Winnipesaukee. So I was kind of familiar with that area. I knew it wasn't too far. So and I knew like I remembered you had run it. And so that had like stuck out in my mind. I'm like, okay, like, you know, there's like it could be achievable or something. So in my mind, that was the one that would work. And so I signed up like after dithering again for a little like couple weeks of being uncertain and being like, oh, do I really want to do this? I'm not sure. Is this the best? Because I didn't love the time frame so much. But I was just so excited to do it. Like I found some other ones that looked good in the fall, but I'm like, I can't wait till the fall. Like I've made up my mind that I want to do this. I'm like, I want to do this like today. I was like, 20 weeks is as long as I can wait.
Well, I think that's super smart too, because, you know, I know lots of people who would go through that same cycle, get really excited and truncate the timeline and like want to do the April race and then sort of like cram the training in and maybe it would work out, maybe it wouldn't. But then, you know, when I suggested like, hey, let's, you know, let's look at like a couple other races that might be on a little bit of a longer time frame. I remember that you had a little resistance to it, but I love that you didn't just write it off. You know, you embraced it and you sort of looked around, you know, and that the fact that you were able to make the decision to do it in June, because some other people in that scenario would have been like, spent a lot of time, you know, being wishy-washy, going back and forth and thinking, oh, June or September or whatever. Well, maybe I'll just wait and see, you know, and then June comes and you didn't sign up for the race and it passes. Now you're into later in the year and, you know, now you have school schedules to conflict with. And then this is how it sort of like snowballs into never being able to do it because you don't do what you said that I said before, which is like to draw a line in the sand or, you know, just put a stake in the ground and just say, I'm going to do it. And, you know, if something, some force majeure happens and you can't do the race that you signed up for, that's a whole separate thing. But to put it off and sort of string yourself along, I think does like a huge disservice to you, not only training wise, but from like a mental, emotional perspective, because you're just like in the in-between. And that's like a really uncomfortable place to be.
Yeah. And like, I felt like I had already been doing like about like maybe 15 miles running a week. And I loved what you had said about the walking. So I started to like do more walking, and I'd already started your 10-week plan when I picked the Gunstock race. And then I looked at the 20-week schedule. I was actually like had two more weeks until 20 weeks would start. Yeah. And so I loved that I was able to like get that base building in. So yeah.
Yeah.
Like come up to speed with the questions. Yeah.
So you go through the training. Does everything go well, or do you have some bumps and twists and turns? Like how does your training go?
Yeah. So that's what I was about to start rambling on to, but I wanted to make sure if you had any other questions. So basically it was all about the zone 2. Hmm. And like, I know that's always like something that people like run into where they're like, wait, what? Cause I didn't realize like I had been running really fast when I was running. And like, sometimes I would dread running because I was always like running so hard.
Yeah.
And so I love the idea of like easy running, but then when I saw like what my heart rate was doing at what I even considered easy was still like zone 3 or zone 4. And I'm like, I need to run so slow and sometimes even walk. And so I went through a couple of periods after I started like the initial first weeks of the training when I was like, I'm not even a runner. I'm like a walker. And I'm starting to tell people like mostly just like my husband. I'm like, I think I'm going to do like a 50K. And he's like, I remember marathon training, Jessica. He remembered it from the second marathon. He's like,
yep.
Okay. Like, here we go again. But in my mind though, like, so I was like kind of excited about, I'm going to like push this new distance. And I was like telling my kids a little bit, but then I'd be like, oh my God, but I'm not even a runner. I'm just a walker. Like all I ever do is walk. And I'd be like out there walking and people would pass me running. And I'm like, but I am a runner. So it was like very like mental to like kind of come to terms with like what it meant to like build up that endurance capacity. So I had to like read so much and listen to multiple repeats of those podcasts explaining it to really like wrap my head around it, to like have faith in it working. And I think I remember chiming in on like the Run Your First 50K Facebook group when I was like maybe like 6 to 8 weeks into the training, where I was like, for the first time ever, I jogged and my heart rate was like in zone 2 the whole time without like walk breaks. And like I never thought it would work, but it did. But so like the caveat to that being is that throughout a lot of that training, not all of it, but a lot of it, I was like on my treadmill. And I remember talking to you and being like, so I kind of just like do all my training on the treadmill. And you're like, so no, like you have to like get off the treadmill. And I'm like, okay. So I was like, yeah, I will. But then I like didn't, because I'm like, oh, the weather's bad. I don't want to run in like the dark and like blah, blah, blah. And like, it's just so convenient. So I guess I kind of kept on the treadmill until about March, when I had actually, so one of the things that I had done in addition to signing up for Gunstock was like looking about halfway through that, around that April period, and being like, I want to do some kind of run that will like kind of be where I am at that moment of the training, as like a practice run. Mm-hmm. And so I signed up for like a trail half marathon. And I think it was like the first or second week. It was sometime like mid-April. And that was such a like wake up call.
In what way?
Maybe I had done like 3 or 4 days like running on trails, like some local trails that are nearby, which are like pretty, you know, pretty even, almost like, I forget what you'd call it, like a railroad trail type
thing. Yeah, like
a
rail trail. Yeah.
Yeah, totally. So then I like went on this like 13 mile trail run, which like had much more elevation. It was much more like, had like technical parts. And I was like, this just feels so different on my body. And I'd be like running over roots and rocks. And I'm like, my feet are going to feel this tomorrow. I'm just like, I had been putting some elevation on the treadmill, but of course, it's just not the same. Mm. And just also to say that by that point, I had been working for some time in like the pelvic PT. And that was awesome, because I also have a history similar to you as like having like, I had herniated discs, my like L4, L5, and that like resulted in that sciatic pain from like a car accident in like 2017. So the PT, like, it's very much related, because so much of it is like building up the core work.
Yep.
And so that was like one thing that was really amazing is that by the time I did the trail half marathon, like I was like good to go. I did not have to worry about any like pelvic floor issues. And so like the running on the trail itself was like, it was just beautiful and I loved it. And even though it was like so hard because I was really not adequately prepared for it, like I got really into it. And so when I finished that though, I was like, it just took me 3 hours to run 13 miles. And I'm like, it took me about, you know, 4.5 hours to run the road marathons. So I'd always kind of been thinking like that. And I'm like, so, huh, that's like very different time than I had been thinking. And it just was very much like, okay, like it was also the very first time I ever ran. I did not even have my hydration pack at this time. So I ran that whole time with like a fanny pack and I just like not thought it out. Like every time you're like, oh, why do people wing it? That was kind of me. And I wasn't trying to wing it. I was just like, I think a little bit in denial about like the steps that were kind of coming closer and ever closer. And so I had procrastinated kind of that leap to like what it would look like to like be doing my nutrition on the trail and to like actually have my feet down on the trail and like experimenting with a drop box. And in my like typical fashion, I didn't tell anyone I was doing it. I just like got up early and I'm like, I'm going for a run. I'll be back. And I went and like ran it. And I was like so proud of myself when I finished though. I was like, I felt like I did a good time. I like ran with this gal and she like was like playing music like outside and just kind of like kept it going and very like, very much like a partner throughout it. So
that's awesome.
Yeah.
So that I feel like that, sorry, not to interrupt you, but like, I love that you're sharing all of the sort of like messy behind the scenes stuff, because it's so important, like, you know, with social media, with podcasting, with like YouTube, you're really only getting the highlight reel. And part of the reason why I like having these conversations is, again, we all come at it from a different angle. We don't all know the same things about getting into ultras and we attack it in different ways. And so I think it's so funny because even though like you think it's unique to you, there are a lot of people who sort of procrastinate. And I was one of these people too, when I first did mine, because I was sort of like, yeah, I'll figure it out. And then the timeline to figuring it out got shorter and shorter. And then my Googling got more furious, fast and furious. And it's just one of those things where sometimes you have to learn those lessons the hard way, like on your own. I mean, that's typically how I have to learn all of my lessons at least once the hard way. Like, you know, I don't generally love people telling me what to do in certain senses. So I have to learn those lessons the hard way. And the same is true for a lot of runners too. And, you know, we see the things, but we don't always necessarily know the effort that goes on behind the scenes to like make this thing happen, like make this glorious 50K finish happen. So I love that you're sharing like, oh, I didn't do this, or I did do this, or I was resistant to get off the treadmill, which I fully remember because I was like, you are gonna have to get off that treadmill, my friend. I said, that trail is gonna be a rude awakening when it hits.
Totally. And I'm like, I'm actually now struggling on the reverse to get back on my treadmill, which I sometimes like have wanted to do. And I'm like, oh, it's just like not as fun. But so one of the things about like where I live in like the South Shore of Boston area is that we are right next to this area called the Blue Hills. I don't know if you're familiar with it, but it's like, you know, it's nothing to like what you got in New Hampshire, but it's like a wonderful like escape from the city. Like you would almost never know it's there. And one thing I had not even realized is that there's this huge like trail running community in the Boston area.
Yeah.
And so the half marathon that I did, it was part of that. They're called like the Trail Animals Running Club, TARC. Yep. And they do like quarterly races. And so when I did that half marathon that day, there were people who were doing a 10K on that same loop. There were people doing like, I think there was a marathon and then there was a 50K. Mm-hmm. And so after that, I realized that like there's so much of that going on in like my own backyard. And I knew that the Blue Hills were there all that time. My husband is like a huge hiker. He's like hikes there all the time and like would leave me in the dust. He like will never run, but he's like super into hiking.
Yeah.
And I'm always like, I don't want to go for a hike. Like I don't want to go with him. He's always like, let's take the kids and go for a hike. I'm like, like can't we just like go to like the city and walk around or something?
Yeah. I don't
know. So it was funny because he's like had the edge there. And I was like, I need to like learn like to run on the trails. Are there loops there? I need to start to like get in there. And I found like a really nice like loop. It's like a 4 mile loop, you know, in the Blue Hills. I don't know exactly what the elevation is, but I'll say it's probably not much. But that was not my concern because it's still like traily and it gave me my distance. And so that's kind of what I wound up starting to practice on as like the miles started to increase. So as I started to kind of get up there, this is like now getting towards like end of April into May, I'm like, okay, time to get that hydration pack. So I finally like took that step and I started like looking at nutrition and things that I like to like eat. And I never got to see like all of your Instagram postings about all the bars you tried, but I always wanted to ask, like, did you ever hear of those like Untapped waffles? Mm-hmm. They're like maple. They're like a maple syrup company that does it. Yep. I love those waffles. And they also have like, they're like quote unquote gels, but they're just like flavored maple syrup.
Yeah.
They're like salted like lime and, you know, they have a coffee one. And like, I got really into those as like my primary nutrition. So I would like tote those. Sometimes having some like graham crackers and like pretzels along, you know, for some food for like, you know, just kind of keeping things going. And I mostly did like the noon electrolytes, but I was really curious about Trailwind. I wound up getting that eventually, but or Tailwind. But that's kind of what I started practicing. And so I was like getting to a point where like after I did that half marathon, I can't do a race and not give it my all. So even though it was like only 13 miles, like I had meant to do it as a practice run, I like pushed it and I
did. Yeah.
So I was like super hurting after that. And that was like I did that 13 miles the week I was supposed to do like a 19 miles. So I felt like it kind of did trip me up. And so those next couple of weeks, like I struggled a lot with the runs and like doing the distance. And I tried to like kind of catch up a bit, which I guess you don't always need to do, but I was really in that space where I'm like, I don't know what to do. Like I missed it. Do I need to go back and like do it for extra credit? So I was trying to kind of just get back on my schedule as best I could. But what I started to run into is like, as I got into these higher mileage, I had this like total awakening in my life where I was like, I literally don't have 5 or 6 uninterrupted hours of my day. You know, it's one thing to grab like 2 or 3 hours here and there, 4 hours, sure, like a special occasion, 5 hours. But like, I kind of was like, the only time I can really do this, because weekends have been so busy with like all the kids' activities, like I can only get up at, if I start running at 4 a.m., like, you know, I still need to be doing something by 8 a.m. Like that's not enough time anymore.
Yeah.
So I like flexed around some work time so that I was able to do like a weekday run. Cool. And even still, I like dropped the kids off at like 8:30. I think I got to the trail by 9. And then by like 2 or 2:30, I had to go.
Yeah.
Like still not enough time. So like I never got up to that like final like 24 miles, which I think was like the biggest like run that you do.
Yep.
So I definitely had some like feelings of like nervousness around that too. Cause I'm like, I'm just like running so slow. I can't make this mileage. Running with the hydration pack really like took a lot of like adjusting to. And I still have this issue where I feel like it sloshes around all the time. And somebody told me how you can like burp it. And I try to like burp out the air, but it still sloshes. I had to kind of get used to that. Cause I felt so like, I had such like imposter syndrome the first time I started wearing the hydration pack. I'm like, I look like I like should know what I'm doing. And I don't.
I love that you just said that, because that's how I felt. And I think there's probably a lot of people that are resisting getting the hydration pack because they are having those thoughts about it. It's like, this is kind of a big step. Like if I buy this hydration pack and put it on and then go out on the trails, people are going to think and they're going to know that I go for long distances. And what I think is funny is just the general public's assumption that if you do ultras, that you're fast. And I just want to restate to everybody that like, I am not a super fast runner. You don't have to be super fast to do ultras. You obviously have some time parameters, but like, I think it's just a funny thing that I have noticed and I have encountered a lot when I've been out on runs and I meet people just, you know, randomly on the trails that are hikers or walkers or just general fitness enthusiasts who I might get to talking to. And they're like, oh yeah, like, what do you do? And you tell them you run ultras. And I try to downplay it as much as possible. Like I just am, you know, that's just my personality. But then I'm thinking about a specific conversation that I had with someone who was like, oh, well, I saw you wearing the pack. So I just literally, they said, I saw you wearing the pack. So I just assumed that you were fast. And I was like, I mean, fast-ish, like relatively, but I'm not in danger of winning any races anytime soon. So I love, sorry, I'm just rambling about this, but I love that you said that because I think that's one of those things that's sort of that line in the sand for people. It's like, if I have to buy this pack and I'm going to wear this pack, now I have to own the fact that I'm an ultra runner.
Totally. And like one of the runners in the like Run Your First 50K, like group one said, like, I want like a shirt that says I'm running slow on purpose. And I'm like, I want that too. When I've got my pack on and I'm like shuffling along. Like, mm-hmm. I am doing this for a reason. Okay. Like, yes, you're like flying by me. Go for you. Go do you. But like, there is a thought behind this.
Yeah. So totally.
But like, I started to just like really fall in love with those runs, like on that loop. I was very much stuck on that loop. And then like, one part, like kind of, as I kind of was like nearing closer to the end of the training period, this like I had joined like the TARC Facebook group, mm-hmm. and this one guy's like, oh, like I will like lead these groups into the Blue Hills, and like, you know, you could like, you know, anyone's like welcome to come and join me. I'm going to be doing this like loop, whatever. And that was my thing too, because I'm like, I had mentioned before, like I didn't really like to run at 4 a.m. in the dark. Running by myself on a trail was a whole other thing too. Because it's like still in the Boston area, like I'm like still a girl, and like I still like to run really early when nobody's around, and like, so I was like, okay,
yeah,
that's good. I'm gonna jump in with this group and see how it goes. Hmm. And so I met with them, and they're like, okay, so we're gonna do this like hill where you just go up and you just go down, and repeat for like 2 hours. So I'm like, okay, this is great. So like this, they were like these two dudes, like one of them's like, I'm training for the Grand Canyon. And then there's this other guy who like leads these groups all the time. They just start like hiking right up and like talking. And like within like the first like 5 minutes, I'm like, oh, I'm in trouble. And I'm like, yep, I'm gonna follow. Don't wait for me. Just leave me. And they're like, okay, well, this is like the basic path. And it was like easy enough to follow. And so I like slogged through that. And I was like, at the end of it, I'm like, okay, that was like 1,100 feet of elevation. And that's when I realized like I hadn't really been paying attention to elevation. And I'm like, I had looked at my route and it was like on the for Gunstock and it was like 600 feet of elevation. So I was like, oh, like I just did like 1,100 feet of elevation. That's great. But like I was already in my taper period when I like discovered that like little training area like near my home. And I'm like, okay, so for future reference, I could use that for trail training. And I'm kind of like shooting ahead a little bit because there's some more backstory I want to say, but just to say, it wasn't until about like 2 weeks before the race that I realized that 600 feet elevation is just like one loop. And if you're doing that five times, that actually means like 3,000 feet of elevation.
When you said that, I was like, we didn't cover the fact that this race is a looped course and you're going to have to do it multiple times.
And so I had actually, I went out for like a couple weeks before the race. I went out for like a walk again with my friend, Adina O'Neill, who I told you about that, like got the conversation started for me. And she was like kind of going through like all of like some last minute things to think about too. Cause like, she's like, knows so much about like endurance run, like more like triathlons and like swims. And so she was like going through things and she like brought that up too. I'm like, yeah, it's only 600 feet. I'm like, I totally got this. I'm like, I've been doing this Ponka Pong loop that's like 4 miles and it's not too like graded, but it's only 600 feet. So I think I'm fine. And she's like, but is that each lap or is that one lap? I'm like, oh. And so that's when I like looked it up and realized, I'm like, I don't really know what that means. I don't really know if I'm in trouble or not. But that's something I definitely did not factor in.
Yeah.
And realize until like the very end.
But you were already like in the taper, right? You were like within striking distance, like a couple weeks close to your race. Yeah.
So I'm like, okay, yeah. I'll see what comes. But I wanted to give in a little bit more of like a little bit back when I was about like 6 to 8 weeks. I started to like really start to like fall apart with my plan to do the race. Mm-hmm. Like it was around the time that I had done that like biggest run I could, and it was like 22 miles and I was like, this just sucks. And like I'd working on this like huge work project. I was under like so much pressure for work. And then like all of like the kids' demands were like super hyped up because like the end of the school year is got to literally be the worst time to ever train for a race, and I'll never do this time period again.
Note to self.
It was so much. And then I was like starting to realize, like, so throughout this typical me, I'd only told my husband and my kids that I was doing the race. They don't really care. So they're not talking about it. My husband, he's kind of doing his own thing anyway. But I'm starting to realize, I'm like, this is actually happening. Actually, I'm going to have to do this. And I'm like, I don't even know if I can do this. And I had wound up telling my sister because like she has that place like close by. And I was like, hey, you're going to be around for this. And I started to like look into it and I'm like, oh my God, I'm going to have to like pack up all my stuff and like bring this all. And then I'm like, I'm going to have to pack up all the kids' stuff because I'm bringing them too. I'm going to have to book an Airbnb because we're doing this as part of our vacation. And oh my God, this is like literally the race is Saturday, which on the last week of school where they finish their school, we pack up and we go and then I race. And I just started to like lose it in my mind. Like that is just so much stress and pressure. And like, there's just no way it's going to work. Plus it's going to cost all this money to like rent a place. And so I remember like, I told my sister, I'm like, you know what? Like I had just discovered the TARC, you know, community and there's like a 50K in August. And I was like, you know what? I think I'm just going to like defer or like pull out of gun stock. And I'm like, I'm fine with it. Like, I'm still going to do a 50K, but I'm going to do one that's closer where I don't have to bring the, you know, we can just do it as a day trip or whatever. Totally low stress. And she's like, yeah, you know, that makes sense. You got to do what you got to do. You know, she wasn't like, oh, are you sure? Like talking me out of it. And then I was like, yeah, I think that's how it's going to be. And like, I kind of sat with that for a couple of days. And this was again, like about 6 to 8 weeks before the race. And then like, every time I would say it to myself, I had this feeling like, wah, wah. Like, I'm okay. I'm just not going to do it. This one, I'm going to do this other one. And every time I would hear myself justifying it, I was like, wah, wah. Like, why am I like backing out of this? I'm like, why am I chickening out? And I like really had to like question it. And it was like this whole like kind of existential period where I was like, I don't think it's really about the fact that this sounds stressful. I think it's just about the fact that this is actually happening. And I am like panicking. And I'm looking for loopholes out of it. And I don't want to go through like the start of my summer continuing to train for a 50K. Like I want to do it and then like have a little time off.
Yeah. I think that's like, that's super common too, I think. And people get, it's funny because I was talking with a few of the women in the She Runs Ultras membership today. Like we were doing our coaching calls. And a couple of them are sort of in the throes of this right now. Like they're either at the height of their training and they're questioning whether or not they can actually do it. They're worried about, you know, one person was saying like, oh, it took me 7 hours to run 22 miles on this trail. And I'm concerned that like, I'm not going to make the cutoff because I only went 22 miles in 7 hours. And I was like, we had a whole discussion about it. And, you know, this is sort of the beginnings of doing exactly what you talked about, like second guessing yourself and, you know, trying to, you know, not necessarily make excuses, but like find loopholes, like you said, to sort of make yourself feel better about it. But then I love how you said every time you question yourself that you sort of got this like, I'm going to translate it as like an uncomfortable feeling in the back of your head because you like knew the reality of the situation, right? You were like, I really don't want to bail on this, but I'm uncomfortable and I'm scared. So I don't know what to do.
Yeah. And once I realized that it was like more about that emotional piece rather than logistics, I was like, no, I'm going to do this. And I like booked the Airbnbs and I like did that work. And I like, you know, just was like, okay, I like recommitted in my mind. And I was like, I don't know if I'm going to finish it. I'm like, this took me so long. Like, I don't know how it's going to go, but I'm going to do it. And I'm like, back on track. And then I started to tell people that I was going to do it. Like I would tell a couple of moms that I'd see here and there. I'm like, I'm going to run a race. They're like, oh yeah, what are you going to do? I'm like, oh, 50K. And I would totally like be the same. I'm like, I'm mostly just going to walk it. I'm just like walking, you know, I'm totally downplaying it like so much. It's so funny how we do that. But a lot of them were like, I mean, all of them were like, so like supportive. And they're like, that's awesome. It's hard to like conceive of it. And I'm like, it's no big deal.
It's just nothing. Just, yeah. I want to really hear about the race. I mean, it's a race that I've done, so I'm familiar with it, but tell everybody, like you said, it was the Gunstock race, but give us a little like background on, you know, what the format is, the, you know, the race itself.
Yeah. So, it is like essentially a 10K loop. So you have to do 5 loops to do the 50K. And as I discovered right at the end, each loop has 600 feet of elevation. And that's like vertical elevation. I don't know how that equates to like how much you go down. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Sometimes I think people like have that described differently. But there's also like, it's a trail running festival. So there's all sorts of other races going on around the same time. And the race that I ran, there was, I believe there was a 10K, a 30K, the 50K, and an 80K. And I personally, like, I love a looped course, because when I run for the first time in a distance, I don't know, it feels so much longer to me. Like, I like the idea of like out and backs, like, you know, point to point. But like, if I haven't run that already, then it's just going to feel like, I feel epic and it feels like very like lost for me. I'm disoriented. I don't know where I am. I just don't have my bearings. And so that was something I noticed with like the half marathon I ran. It was like, I think it was like a 6 mile, I think it was like 10K. And so like, even though I only did two laps, the second lap I had landmarks, I had associations, like it just was like so much more bearable for me. So I like that idea. And yeah, it's in Gunstock. It's like right at the end of June. So it's like the last Saturday in June, or Saturday and Sunday in June. The event is on for both, both times. And leading up to the race, like, the weather kept changing. So I was like, oh my God, it's going to be 90 degrees and hot. So I like listened to your podcast, like describing your Gunstock race, which was like your hottest race ever. I listened to that multiple times. I'm like, okay, I have to get cooling towels. I'm like telling my husband, I'm like, you have to get a cooler full of ice. I'm like making all these plans. And suddenly then I looked and I'm like, actually, wait, the temperature is like now in like the 70s and now it's going to rain the whole time. And I'm like, oh my God, I don't know how to run in the rain. I've like literally never ran in the rain. Like, I mean, I have historically in my life, but not as like carrying stuff and like actually planning on trailing. So I'm like, okay, add that to the why you always say run in bad weather. I'm like, okay, didn't do that. So, but it kept going back and forth. So I really didn't know what to expect up until that day. And it wound up being like kind of okay. It was definitely on the hot side, but it wasn't like the high humidity like it has been recently. And it looked like there might be some like scattered thunderstorms or like scattered sprinkles. And so that was another thing that kind of threw a little wrench in, because on the day of the race, they're like, our policy, if there's thunderstorms within a 20-mile radius, they stop the course and you have to go to your car and wait for them to say that the race is back on. And I was like, if they send me to my car, I'm not coming back. I'm like, that's not going to happen. But one of the things I decided to do, like literally like kind of the night that we were like heading up there to New Hampshire, is enroll everybody in my family in a race. So that basically on Saturday, I put all of my kids and my husband into the other runs that were going on. So basically,
I love this.
So basically I'm like, cause that's the day I have to go there anyway for packet pickup and it's a whole festival. I'm like, oh, it's fun. Like they'll check it out and see. And so I like was looking at it with my husband. I'm like, oh, you should totally do this. I'm just going to sign you guys up for it. I'm like, does anyone care? Do you guys mind? Everyone's fine with it. And three of my boys like have gotten really into soccer. So like, I'm like, your fitness is good. So I signed like three of the ones who had been doing soccer up to the 2K race. And then I've got like my other son and daughter, who are both like moderately like active, but they haven't been doing anything like really structured or preparation. And my husband into like the hike that they have. I think it's like a mile and a half hike. And so that was like an amazing story, like the day before the race, because we go and like do the packet pickup and check in. And then like the boys who did like the 2K race, my son actually won like first. And I was like, so that's my 13-year-old. And I was like, so proud and impressed. And then my other son, who's like they were nine at the time. My other set of twins, one of the other ones won like eighth place or something. Like they just had like great runs. The other one, like not as strong, but like finished. And I was like, yes, you like did it. Cause I know it was like hard for him. And then with the like, with the mile and a half run, it was like a mile and a half, like hike up the mountain. My husband, like I said, he's like super into hiking and he does it all the time, but like he doesn't run. He hadn't really been hiking for a while. But when he got up there, he was kind of like, he had never done anything like that. And he was like, I can win. He's like, I think I could totally do this. He's like, yeah, I'm like not trained, not planned. They like shot off the gun and they like, he booked it off up the mountain. And I'm like, oh my God. So he's like really going for it. He wound up like DNFing.
Oh no.
Like hurt his like hamstring like halfway up. And so it was just like so funny. So my other like son and daughter, like they like completed the race. They all get to ride home and like they ride back in like the like ski lift at the end. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so that was just like a little, like, funny debacle, because I'm like, you just did everything that you're like not supposed to do. But, to be fair,
but I love that you like turned it into like a whole family thing. That's cool.
That's what I really had wanted to come out of it. Like, I wanted them to like see what this is like and like have some excitement for it. And so it worked out. And then I'm like, okay, so now, guys, next day, race day, it's my day. And I'm like, you know what? I've gone to all your soccer practices. I've gone to all your hockey practices. I have brought you there. I have cheered for you. I have been there. I'm like, today's my day. You're going to cheer for me. And I'm like, and for the first time ever, I'm going to have people at the end of the, you know, at the trail when I end. Like,
I love it.
At the finish line. That's like never happened. But I'm also like, but I'm also going to take like 8 hours to run this thing. So I'm like, so I don't want you to be like sitting around waiting. So I'm like, literally, like, I'm going to get up as I always do, drive nice and early, you guys sleep, and then come like a little later on, and I'll text you here and there along the way. So one thing I like had not expected is that Gunstock was like not as crowded as I thought. And that's one thing I've always loved about road races. I like to blend into the crowd. I like to disappear. I don't want to be like special in any way. I mean, sure, maybe if I was like, you know, elite runner, go for it. But I'm like, I don't want to be at the very end, but I want to kind of be around other people.
Yep.
And so when that was kind of like a little bit of a bummer for me, because I was like, everyone spread out so much. And I was like, I just thought it was going to be like more of like a crowd situation. So it was fine though. So they basically like started off like everyone in like different waves. So like the 80K started first. And I'm like, you know what? At the end of the day, I'm like, at least like I'm going to finish before the 80K people. I'm sure some 80K people will finish before me, but at least like there'll still be people on the trail. Right. And I like was like at the beginning of the start line, and it was funny because like nobody was at the very front of the line. Everyone kept like backing like way back. So I was like, I'll go up to the front. Like, I don't mind starting at the very front. I just like, I'm not going to stay there, obviously. So whatever. And they like, that's when they made that announcement about like thunderstorms. And I was just like, I'm just not going to handle that well if that happens. And I'm like, I'm not going to worry about it, but I'm like,
yeah,
you know, whatever. That's like a wrinkle in the plan that I'm just like hoping won't happen.
Yeah.
And so I feel like for all of my different laps, like I had kind of like a different like emotional theme for each.
I love it.
So I call my first lap the delusions of grandeur, where I'm like, I know my running time throughout this whole time has been like slow, moderate, but I'm like, but those are training runs. So now I'm really going to like push it. And I'm suddenly going to do like 10 minute miles. I'm like, I'm going to finish the thing in like 6 hours. I'm just going to fly. I am ready for it. And so that was like my hyped up thought as like I take off, and I'm like not taking off too fast. I'm totally like low and moderate. I'm like, gonna like mm-hmm. way in. I'm like, everyone's going to be stopping at like, you know, all like the trail supports. There was 3 trail supports, aid stations along the way, which is like so incredibly generous. Like that's like every 2 miles there is like
yeah.
a very big aid station, but I had just planned to be like self-supported. So I was like all about what I had on me, and I had my own Dropbox. I made a nice little station for myself with like, you know, extra shoes, extra socks, like as much as I could kind of think about to like plan in advance. And so the first round, I'm like kind of just seeing where people shake out. And I was kind of like landing with like a pack of girls, like women around my age. They were a little bit ahead of me, but I really couldn't quite keep up. And that's when I started to realize how like different the elevation was from what I had been practicing on.
Yeah.
But I'm like, it's fine, you know, like I'll like obviously like walk to get to the top, and then, you know, run when I can run, and, you know, kind of go with it. And so by that first, I think like about halfway through the first run, like my delusions of grandeur were gone, and I was like very much coming down to like reality of my capabilities. And one interesting thing here is that my husband and I had like looked at the course map, and he called, I don't know how much they change it over time, but there was this one little segment which we called like Cheater's Corner, because like you kind of come up on like, you know, this part where that kind of like loops back. So it's not like a perfect circle of a loop. It has this little loop that like you kind of like dip back, and then you'll see people like passing each other along the way. And he looked mm-hmm. up. He's like, oh yeah, that's where you just like go ahead and like jump through. And we kept like making all these like jokes about it. And so like when I was like coming around that part, I kind of like had that laugh, and I'm like, okay, there's my like landmark. It's Cheater's Corner. I like kept calling it that.
That's funny.
And then I like had hooked up with some other people that I was running with. And this one person started talking to me, and she seemed like kind of nice and friendly. And she's like, is this your first 50K? I'm like, oh my God, yeah, totally. And I'm like, okay, so I'm going to have a running buddy. And I wasn't sure how I felt about having a running buddy, because like in the most time, like I generally run by myself. I feel like I'm generally constantly talking to people. Like I talk to my patients, I talk to my children, I teach in education as well. So I'm talking to students. Yep. And I'm like, I'm fine totally running by myself. And I'm not necessarily looking to have somebody to run with for 8 hours. And I'm also like, I'm still kind of not sure how the etiquette works. Like when you start to like make a friend, do you have to stay with a friend? Are you obligated to the friend? Like, what does that look like? And so this person was friendly and we were kind of chatting, you know, kind of, she was going to give me tips and telling me things. So I'm like, I already know this guy. I already know. Cause I'm like, yeah, I like, you know, I listened to this woman on this podcast and like, you know, I got this whole training plan from her. I'm like, there's things that you're telling me that like, I already know, but it was like fine. It was like friendly and, you know, she was nice. But then like, as we kept going, I'm like, she's kind of talking less and less. And I'm like, keep like gabbing on. I'm like, okay, so maybe I should like rein it in. And she was like running just like total aid support. So she wasn't like caring much. So we came up to the first aid station and I'm like, now what do I do? Should I wait for her? Should I walk with her? Like, I don't know how this works. And she's like, I'm just gonna stop. And she's like, you can go on ahead. I'm like, yeah, I don't think I'm gonna. And I'm like, it felt kind of weird after that though. Like I felt like we would then like kind of pass each other, but like when I would talk, she wouldn't really want to talk. And I'm like, okay, that's cool. Like she's not wanting to engage. I was kind of like over like blah, blah, blah. Like it's all good. I don't want to like be talking the whole time anyway. I kind of want to go back into like my zone. And one of the things I had been like kind of stressing about before the race too, was like, what am I going to listen to? Like, should I listen to anything? Should I listen to like outdoor like coaching programs? Should I listen to like podcast music? And I felt like at the end, like I just didn't want to listen to anything. I just wanted to like focus. And I was like, how will I even do that? But it really was like so much more intuitive than I had expected. And so like, you know, I continued that first lap and then I would like pass this person like off and on. And it was like friendly enough. And then like into my second lap, I definitely started to like struggle more with like a lot of like doubt and uncertainty, where I was like just feeling tired. I felt sluggish. I felt like I wasn't like moving. and I started just like, I had like a lot of negative thoughts. I think like looking back to it, there were like a lot of the different like landmarks along the way that I would kind of, that I was now starting to like look at and pin down. It's funny too, cause I called this one area like meth lab. Like I was kind of thinking about the like Berkeley, like fall classic you had mentioned. And it was like this really fly area where it just feels like super like dusty. And there were like some people like out there like playing some music and it was funny, but.
Is it near the campground?
I think so. Yeah. I mean, it's gotta be, cause there's like a lot of people. And there was this one part where you like run by a swimming pool. Mm-hmm. And so there, I mentioned like Peter's Corner. There's also this place where like people were fishing. And then there was like the woods that were like super like dense. I call those like the Hobbit woods.
Yep.
And I would like start to recognize like the aid stations as like those points. And what I started to just realize was so hard was like when you hike up a really steep hill, then you get to the top, you don't necessarily have, I didn't necessarily have the energy to like then break into a run.
Yeah.
It was just like, it was definitely like a slog in that like second and third lap. And like around that point, so here's my little story. Around that point, I was like coming up and I saw my like little friend and I was like about to like kind of pass and we kind of ran together for a little bit and they ran up ahead and it was like right at Cheater's Corner. And this person like stopped to like tie their shoes and I like just kept running and then like literally never saw that person again for a long time. And I was like, oh, like they must have really fallen behind. I guess I really like surged ahead and I kept like running. And then like, I don't know, like sometime into like half a lap later, I saw this person up ahead of me. So I'm just saying, I'm like, is that something that really happens? I don't know. It seemed like it did. I looked at the person's time at the end and I'm like, okay, yep, they're ahead of me, but were they really?
It's unfortunate. Like I've been in a couple of races that have switchbacks like that. And some are just real quick, like, you know, 50 feet. And then you're, you know, right back to that little Cheater's Corner section. And some are longer, sort of like what you're talking about, where you have to go for a ways before you end up back at that same point on the other side. And I've actually been in a race where somebody did that and cheated and cut the corners. And a friend of mine who was also running that same race witnessed, I don't want to say she actually witnessed it happening, but she sort of had the same experience that you did. And she reported it because there was no way that this other person, I believe it was a woman, was faster than my friend. She just like, there just was no way. And so she reported it and they looked into it and they eventually figured out that, that this person had cut the course. And it's unfortunate that it happens. And whether it, you know, in certain cases, whether it was a mistake or whether it was intentional, you know, you don't know. But like, I certainly, like, if I had made a mistake, like, I would feel horrible about it. I would feel like there's no part of me that could honestly cut the course and feel good about a finish. But I can see it from the other perspective in sort of like, sort of pulling some of the threads that you were talking about, you know, the self-doubt and the pace and the pressure and wanting to finish and not wanting to DNF. And, you know, some people will do anything not to DNF. And I feel for them because it's hard, but it's also not the end of the world. But cheating does happen and it's an unfortunate reality. It just,
yeah. You know, I mean, I was I was kind of questioning myself a bit. I'm like, did I just not see? But I'm like, I was on the course like the whole time. I'm pretty sure that's what I saw. And I'm still going to say that I don't know for sure. But like, it was just a little something that was like a surprise along the way.
A little suspect.
Yeah. And so like, so during that period, so that was like kind of like lap 2 to 3, like I was getting my landmarks down and like kind of doing okay. And like throughout that time, like the different waves were coming. Like first it was the 80Ks started like an hour before me, then it was the 50Ks. And then like an hour or so later, it was the 30Ks that started. And then there was the 10Ks. And so there I'd be running and people would start like thundering by and everyone was like super nice, but like, it was like demoralizing to me, like constantly getting passed, even though I knew like these could be different. They're like fresher. They're just on their first lap. I'm on like my like second or third. I was like that feeling of like, I'm not passing anybody. Everybody's passing me was just like, irritating me. It was like, I don't even know how to describe it. Like, it was just this like kind of irksome feeling, kind of contributing to like my like fatigue and feeling like this is just like going to take forever. And like, I don't even know like what I'm doing out here, even though like the other part of me was like, you know, all I have to do right now is race. And like, that was something like throughout all of my training, I was always like, okay, I'm going to do my race and I have to like get the kids and I have to like go to work and I've got to like, you know, it's like that constant stress. So it was always like 1,000 things going through my mind when I was training. And I kept telling myself that to kind of get myself into that place of calm before the race day was like, all I have to do is race. That's like the only thing I have to do is to show up. And that actually like took so much stress off. So even though like there in those periods when I was like feeling kind of like all that doubt and uncertainty, like creeping up, I was like, I don't have to get anyone water right now. I don't have to like find shoes. I'm like, I am just like on the trail. Nobody's bothering me. It's beautiful. And I kept being able to kind of like come back to that place.
That's awesome.
And it was just like, there's this other thing too. I don't know if you've ever heard of this guy, like the Slow AF Club.
Yeah.
And like, I had just kind of like caught on, I'm like blanking on his name now, but I had like kind of caught on to like his like book and like what he was saying. And like, I listened to that within a couple of weeks of like doing the run. And I just like resonated with it so much because I'm such a back of the packer. And so like at the end, but like still get so much enjoyment of it. And he had like done this little run, this little song, like I run if I have to run by myself. And I kept like repeating that over and over too, because I'm like, that's how I always run. I'm always by myself and it's fine. And then like I turned the corner of like that third lap. And once I like turned the corner of that third lap, I felt like I've got this huge chunk behind me. And it was like something just totally shifted. And like while I had been doing like a lot, a pretty good amount of like walking, like the first 2 to 3 laps, especially in laps 2 and 3, suddenly I felt like comfortable running. And like I got stronger in that fourth lap. And part of it was just like that emotional shift. The other part was that I also picked up a trick from you in that I completely weaned myself off all caffeine like about a month or two before. And so by the fourth lap, I'm like, coffee time. So I brought in the caffeinated maple syrups and just like a little bit of the boost then. And it really like, I don't know, the combination of those two things worked great. So I'm like forgetting what like my emotions were. Oh yeah. So like first lap was like delusions of grandeur. Then my second lap was like humbled resignation. That's what I called that. Lap 3 was doubt and uncertainty. And then like lap 4 was like rebound confidence. So like I was almost like nearing towards the end of my fourth lap. I was kind of in touch with my kids. You know, I checked my messages, like the family was like on the way. I'm like, okay, this is cool. Like I'm going to be seeing them. And I came up to like the third aid station of the course. And suddenly there's my husband standing there with my dog. And I was like, oh my God, like I just had not expected it. And it was like the most like amazing thing to like see somebody that I knew. And he was like, oh, he was by himself. Like the kids were like further back. I just like gave him this huge hug and he's like, you're doing so great. And it was funny too, cause like there's this whole like no muling, right? Like, so nobody can hold things for you. And I like gave him, I'm like, can you just like fill this up with water? Like I gave him like a water bottle that I had. And then I'm like, wait, no, don't. So I'm like, I don't want to get disqualified. For that. And so anyway, so he kind of like ran walk. And so I was like going kind of slow enough. I'm like, okay, so we'll just like go out to this part and I'll see the kids. And the kids were like so excited to see me, but they didn't realize like I still had another lap to go. And so they're like, wow. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm like in this like great high, like seeing everybody, but I'm not done, kids. They're like, huh, how long is it going to take? I'm like, it'll take a while, probably another like hour or so. Like, and then like my boy who had just like won like first place the day before was like, I'm going to run the last lap with you. And I was like, what? Like, I had not expected that. It was like such a total surprise. And so like, that was like my last lap was like with company, like my son, like it was like so awesome to like have him there. And like, I was like, are you sure? And like, I'm kind of talking him through that. Cause he had never run like a consistent 6 miles, you know, he's like 13 athletic, but like, that's still a lot. And I'm like, you can like run up to this point if you're tired or you just don't want to, you can turn around. And then he's like, mom, just look at me. I'm like walking the same speed that you're running. And I'm like, okay, so yeah, you can be my crew. And I have to say, it was like, it was awesome having the company. It was a great like distraction. It definitely like just threw me for a curve. Like I wasn't expecting it. It was like definitely different like mental energy. And then suddenly after like going for like multiple laps really pretty much by myself, like I was like talking to somebody. And then I'm like, I'm tired because I'm like expending energy talking to you. So like throughout that last final lap, I was like, I was still feeling like in high spirits, but there were times when I'm like, oh my God, I'm just so tired. He's like, come on, mom. Like he was like pulling me through the hard parts. And I'm like, I don't know. So I was like having moments. And I'm like, listen, Walter, I know I always tell you guys, that's the same. I'm like, I tell you guys not to swear, but I'm like, this is like a special moment. And what happens on the trail stays on the trail. And I'm like, this is like, so I had started naming other parts, like, you know, not really great names. I'm like, this is like, there's this part, it's called Birch Woods. And I'm like, oh, we're in the Bitch Woods. And I'm like, dropping F-bombs the whole time. And he's like, it's okay, mom.
I love this so much. This is so amazing.
And like sometime around the way too, like we had run into some people who were like doing their like 80K. And I'm like, and I kept saying to Walter, I'm like, I just don't want to meet DFL. I'm like, he's like, what's DFL? And I'm like, dead fucking last. He's like, oh yeah. He's like, no. And he's like, you're not going to be though. You're not going to be. There's like plenty of people. And I'm like, you know what? At the end of the day, like maybe I would be for my age group or whatever, but I'm like, as long as there's still people on the trails, like I don't care. But at this point they were definitely starting to like kind of break down the aid stations. And I was like, it has this like feeling like people are gone. And I was like, okay, let's get this done before they like close down the trail. And like, it was still like a good chunk of time. Like I finished in like 8.5 hours or something. So there was definitely like plenty of time to finish. I wasn't like rushed that way. But it definitely was like getting that feeling where I'm like, okay, like, eventually they do close this thing down. So yeah, I gotta go.
So you finish, you come around the last corner and your son is with you. Now, remind me, you come down the hill into the finishing chute, right?
So is that the like, way? So this is the area, I called this part like my publicity lap because every time I ran through, because there were so many people around. So I'd be like, I'm dying, I'm dying. I'm like, oh, well, I'm in the like people area. So I'm like, you know, checking
red carpet,
making sure I'm looking good. I'm like smiling. I'm like, I'm having fun. So it was the final stretch of the publicity lap. And it's like,
I love it.
Got it like the corral all like sorted. So they've got like the end of the line and like people are kind of lined along it. So definitely like right in front of like where the chair lifts kind of land.
Yep.
So I just like booked it as fast as I could. And like my son, like just booked it right alongside of me. And then like, it was just like such happiness. So happy to be done and to have finished it and to have like felt good. Like I just was like, I never I visualize being here, but like couldn't actualize like that moment until like I'm actually here. And it was, yeah.
Did you cry? Were you like super emotional or were you just like?
I wasn't crying. I was just like overjoyed. And like the feeling of like for the first time ever having family and people at the finish line where like no one had really like ever been there before. Yeah. It was like amazing. And I just felt like, I don't know, it was very touching and like moving and felt all the love. And the kids were so great. And my husband was so great about like helping us like pack up and head home and knowing that mom can't really walk for a while. Although I'm like, I need to keep walking, but I like put my feet up and like totally just like chilled the rest of the night. And I'm like, we had like those beer tickets, you know, that's like a big thing that they do. And so I'm like, I'm gonna have my beer. Cause like I hadn't really been drinking. Like I'm not a huge drinker anyway. And then like with training, I'm like, it'll just slow me down, but I'm like, I'm gonna have my beer. And I drink like half the beer and I'm like, this is disgusting. I can't drink this right now. So I'm like, I can't even like give these beer tickets away.
Yeah. Too funny.
I know. Too funny. And so like, yeah, that was like, I guess the end of it. And it was like, it was just so satisfying. I think that would be like my final word to describe it at the end.
Well, I think it's like, it is super satisfying, especially as somebody who hasn't really told people, you know, that you're doing any of these races, and then for you to come full circle and get, you know, everybody buys into it, right? Everyone from your family is doing some portion of a different race. Now they're here. Your son ran the last lap with you. Like you've come completely full circle. I think it's so amazing. I love that, you know, you were able to incorporate everybody and, you know, everybody was totally on board and they supported you, you know, throughout the process. I love how you said too, that like, I've taken you to all your soccer games, all your extracurricular activities. This is my day. I love that you reclaimed the day for yourself. It was so good.
Yeah. I'm like, cause I'm like, I know sometimes it's going to be a drag and you're like sitting by the, you know, the field and you're bored. And I'm like, so, you know, sometimes that's how it is.
Yeah. Well, I think that's like, you know, as women, and again, I don't have kids, but I have lots of friends who have kids. I'm one of four kids. I remember my mom schlepping us around to all sorts of different stuff. And, you know, it's like, sometimes we find it hard to ask for help or carve out, you know, like this time, like you were looking for those 5 hours and you had to get creative with it. It's like, we have a hard time sometimes asking for help, getting support, feeling like we're not holding up our end of the bargain, whatever that mythological, like whatever the bargain is, right? By carving out this time to do our training. And so I think it's like one of those things that so many of us face because somehow we're fearful of, I don't know, like some sort of, I'm going to use the word retribution. It's like something bad's going to happen if we take this time to like train. But what you've proven is that like you can have five kids and still, you know, run a 50K and your training doesn't have to be perfect. I mean, we talk about this all the time in Run Your First 50K. It's like your training does not have to be perfect. Like, yes, you need to have some sort of structure, some sort of plan, if for no other reason than to just keep you heading in the right direction. But you're going to miss workouts. You're not going to hit every single long run that you need to do. Like life is going to happen and you can still do the damn thing. So I love how you walked us through the entire evolution and just proven to so many people, so many women that are listening to this, that regardless of what their current situation is, whatever their current struggle is, there's like ways that you can get creative. It doesn't have to be perfect. And you can have five kids and be super busy, have a full life and still run a 50K. It's totally possible.
Yeah. And I love like also how you had said, like, whatever happens on race day, but it doesn't negate all of the fitness that you've like acquired throughout the process. And that's what I like went into the race just like thinking about, like, I like definitely have a lot of this behind me. To feel good about.
And I think if you do the, you know, if you make a strong, solid effort to show up consistently and do the training leading up, then it helps to, I'm not going to say it eliminates the nerves, but it helps to quiet the nerves and the like crazy voices in your head that are like shouting at you, like, what are you thinking? You can't do this, right? But if you show up and just give it your best effort in the weeks leading up, it makes the race day experience easier because you can draw from that knowledge, that bank that you've like put in the work, and you don't have to question yourself. You can, you know, you can literally, I think we even did this exercise in one of our calls. It's like, go back through and look and remember your training. Like, you did all of this stuff for this purpose. Now all you have to do, like you said, is just show up and run. Like, that's all you have to do today. You don't have to worry about anything else for this block of time. You just have to move from, you know, point A to point B, whether that's the start to the finish or to every single aid station, and just work your way around. I agree with you. I think for first time people, looped races can be really great because they provide that structure and security. You know, you're not going to get lost unless it's like a really, you know, a really remote type of thing, but it really sets you up for success. So I was secretly very happy when you signed up for that race, because like you said, I've done it and I like it. I like the format. I like the location. I think it's totally like, it's a very accessible race, but it's also can be very challenging, especially if you train on a treadmill and don't do much elevation. But it sounds like you really fared, you know, you fared well. Like, now you know, like a lot of times you have to do at least one of these races. Maybe you're DFL, maybe you DNF, but like, you learn so much. It's such like, that's the only way you're going to get better, is by doing it and practicing and learning the lessons that whatever you face on race day teaches you.
Absolutely. Gosh, it's been like so much. And so like, that's like, when I finished it and was like recounting it and going through it in my mind, I was just like, this really has like fundamentally like changed my outlook in life. Like, I definitely have like a different perspective about like getting to things. And I'm like, you know, part of me is like, okay, you know, the proverbial what's next?
Yeah. Do you have an answer for that?
Kind of, sort of. Like, on the one hand, I'm like, I definitely like have been thinking about like training. I'm like, that was definitely the worst time, I think, to train. Like, I think to have like an event correlating with like the end of the school year, I feel like a March or April would be like really nice for me, because I like, I love to like run in the colder weather. That would be like a good period. And there is actually this race that takes place locally that I have to look into it more. So it's run by that TARC program. It's called like the Frozen Yeti. Yep. And I don't know. Do you know? Are you familiar with that race?
I haven't done it, but I have some friends, and there are quite a few people that listen to this that I know have done the Frozen Yeti.
So I'm like, I'm pretty sure there's like a 100-mile option, but it's, I think it's like a timed race. Like, you run as long as you can for 32 hours. Mm-hmm. I have to look into the details. And I definitely don't feel like I'm ready for a 100-miler like this year. Like, I want to like get more experience just like on the trails. So my thought right now is like to just kind of like work with the TARC, because I love how it's local. So just to do like more half marathons, like more like 10-mile races, like not as like big distances, but just like more times on the trail. Kind of do those quarterly. Some other cool races, like there's that one, like it's called Race Against the Tides. It's like a 50-miler out in Cape Cod, and that just sounds like fascinating, but it'd be interesting because it'd be like super flat and like on sand. I bet that's really hard.
Yeah, that'll be a whole other challenge. You know, and that's the fun part about ultras, is there are so many different formats, so many different locations, so many different choices for terrain, elevation. Like, you could, you know, it's one thing to do, and this is no knock on road races. I did lots of road races, but like, you know, you go to a different city, you see some cool buildings, you run on some pavement, like maybe you get into like a very scenic part of the city and it's cool, but you run out of newness. When you do ultras and you do trail races, doesn't even have to be an ultra. You get to go to all these cool places. You get to see, you know, amazing scenery. I mean, like, you get to go up mountains, you get to be on the beach, you get to, you know, do all sorts of different things and be in different places that you wouldn't get that chance to do if you were simply running road races. And again, it's no knock on road races. It's just, I think, to each his own. And, you know, I think almost like everybody who runs trails and ultras just has like a soft spot for nature, and or nature is their happy place. So it just sort of makes sense that we would want to spend as much time out there as possible.
Yeah, like I had said before, like, it wasn't for me like all about the trails. It was more the distance. But now, like, having run on trails, like, I love them so much. And I'm like, running on the road now, like, bothers me, because I'm like, I don't want to be around cars. Like, I just want to, like, get to the trail and, like, not have to ever hear a car.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. I love that you've come full circle with that too, that, you know, at the beginning you were like, oh, I don't know if I want to be out here on this trail. And now you're like, I can't wait to get back there.
Yeah. And like being from like the Adirondack region too, I'm like, I bet there's some like awesome runs in like my hometown. So I really want to like kind of look into that. There's so many in Vermont, but I don't see as much like in the Adirondacks per se. So I'm going to kind of like check out like the options. There's a lot in Quebec too, which isn't too far where I'm from, but yeah. I feel like I could see how people just get so excited because there's so much out there. I'm like, you just can't even do it all.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, this is why people run ultras well into their 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, you know, because there's no shortage of new and interesting races, especially if you like to travel or, you know, want to check out new and different places and you're open to different distances. I mean, even if you just stuck with the 50K distance, you could probably live to be, I don't know, I'm going to throw out some crazy made up stat here, but like you could live to be 80 and do, you know, and not have to repeat a race, you know what I mean? And do a race a year and not have to repeat one. It's.
Yeah. And so like, I think I had seen something. Can we pause for a quick?
Yeah.
And I need to like, my daughter's frantically texting me that she's at this meeting and I gave her dad. So yeah. So I mean, I guess like I was thinking you had talked about like how often should you even like, how many 50Ks should you do like per year? And I feel like I was able to do this 50K, but I feel like I was kind of just able to do it because I just didn't really have all of that time like on my like in my background of like running on trails a lot. So that's why I feel like I don't really have so much the distance, but more just like doing more work on like being on the trails.
Yeah.
Which I think will just take some time.
And I think too, like, you know, sometimes the assumption is you get into ultras and now you must run all the ultras within a, you know, radius of your house. But some people just have the capacity for one a year, right? And that's great. It doesn't make, you know, you less of an ultra runner if you only run one race a year. It doesn't make you more of an ultra runner if you run every single race. It just is the way that the chips fall for people at certain, and one of the things that I wanted to also bring up, and I'm just now remembering, is how you talked about the different cycles. Like you got really into running and then you went away from it for a long time for very specific reasons and maybe for no reason at all at a certain point too. It just happened to be like this cycle that you went in and out of. So just because you know, do any particular distance race, whether it's road or trail, doesn't mean you have to stay there and or go farther. Like you can come to running and do a little bit and then go away from it for a little bit, come back, you know, come on and off. And it's like, that's what's so great about it is that it's one of those things where, you know, you need some skill, you can build up some skill, but you don't have to, it's not like, you know, cycling or swimming. I mean, I guess swimming is pretty easy too, but like a very high skilled, like I think of like tennis or golf as being like, you know, really skilled sports. And this is no knock on running. I just think it's a super accessible sport that you can go to and come back to, go away from, excuse me, and come back to as many times as you want or need based on whatever you're doing in your life. Like you've got kids, like you may or may not be able to maintain a trail running habit if you have five kids under five at, you know, at a certain time.
Well, that's the goal, is to like continue to try to recruit them to come along, at least some of them who might be so inclined to come along with the effort. So
I think that's great. I love that. So final thought here, if someone is listening to this and they're sort of like have a similar circumstance to you in terms of kids or a busy life or, you know, what would you say? What would like, is there a piece of advice? Is there some, you know?
I think that like, if there's a will, there's a way with like everything in life. And, you know, I think that really getting to the bottom line of like what it means to you and why you want to do it really matters. And I wanted to do it for like so many different reasons. Like one of which I didn't mention was like, you know, my mom had not been doing well with her health. And so like, I just felt like, had she been in a different generation, this totally would have been her thing. And so I really ran and trained for this with like the spirit of my mom, like very much in my mind along the way. And so I feel like if you really want to do this for like a meaning that was like deep and personal for you, you'll find a way to do it. If it's just to like have bragging rights, like it's just not going to like inspire you. So I think just kind of knowing like what your reason is for like wanting to do it. For me, it was like uncharted territory. That's like just so exciting as well. And then like the strategizing to just break things down bit by bit and, you know, be like flexible and gentle with yourself in a way.
Yeah, I love that. Well, when you decide what your next thing is going to be, whether that's that 50-mile race or whatever it is, you'll have to come back and share your journey from 50K to whatever the next thing is, because that's the next big jump. And even if it, you know, if it's not a 50-miler, I think there's like a thing that if you, whatever distance you're at, and I'm not going to articulate, I've been trying to think about a way to articulate this and turn it into a podcast episode, because it's something I've been thinking about a lot. I think going back to the same distance, regardless of what the distance is, whatever your farthest distance is, I think that it's actually more challenging to go back the second and third time because you know what you're in for now. Whereas before you could sort of be like, this is so new. Like it's going to be like an experiment. I have no idea what to expect. Now, you know. And so I almost think that, not to plant this seed in anyone's, in anyone's head, but like, I think it's harder the second time around because you know what you're in for and you have to mentally, physically, emotionally, like steel yourself for it. And like, you know, get back into that headspace of I can do this, you know? So I just think that that's like an interesting thing that I think comes up when people finish a race and they're contemplating what the next thing to do is. I think it's harder to do the same thing. I think you'd be better served to do the next thing because you can get excited about it. It's unknown. There's like that little bit of mystery and excitement that goes along with the unknown. So that's just my two cents.
Yeah, definitely. But I will say I definitely have like that sense of like the revenge complex where I'm like, I've got some unfinished business because like it was like, you know, a little bit of a different race and I want to see like what it would be if I didn't run with my son. It's like, yeah, it's really gone quite that same way. Yeah. So yeah, like definitely. I love that. And I wanted to also say that I love Training Peaks throughout the way. That was something you introduced in your Run Your First 50K group. Yeah. And pretty much like I had 2 weeks after the race where I was like kind of lost and uncertain. I'm like, I don't know what to do. I loved your recovery weeks that were like, you know, put into the plan. But after that, I was like, I don't know what to do. So I'm like, I'm just going to put myself back on the plan again.
I love it.
I'm just kind of looping through. Like, I think like, I don't know, I don't have any specific plan in mind right now, but just to like continue with like that base of fitness. Yeah. I love the run 4 days a week, lift weight, like weight training twice a week. And then like day off. It's great. It's really awesome.
I love it.
So,
oh, that's amazing. Well, thanks for coming on and sharing your story. And I know a lot of people are really going to resonate with, if not all, many, many, many individual sections or parts of your story. So I really appreciate you taking the time to do this.
Absolutely.
So I hope that you guys enjoyed that conversation. We could have talked forever. Like there was a whole section of the podcast that we cut out because Wyatt, my new puppy, needed to go out and go to the bathroom. So we paused for a second. And then there was a whole part where I hit stop instead of pause. And I thought, oh shit, we've lost like the entire, you know, audio that we've just recorded, but not to worry, obviously I salvaged it and we started fresh again and recorded like another 45 minutes, which is how you ended up with, oh, I don't know, like almost a 2 hour long podcast. So all I want to say about this is if Jessica can do it, then you can do it. Whatever your circumstances are, however many kids, no kids, job, no job, whatever your circumstance is, there is no reason why you can't start to carve out a little bit of time to pave the way for you to run your first or your farthest ultra. If you don't know where to start, I would highly suggest just start with the daily shakedown. We talk about it a lot. Go back to the last episode where I walked you through an audio version of the shakedown. Bookmark that one. You can do that every single day. Start to incorporate more walking. Maybe set yourself a step goal for every single day and just watch how these things start to snowball into better fitness, better mood, more energy. And then that's when you really sort of
pick up speed, so to speak, and you start to see the path more clearly to your first half, your first full, your first 50K, all right? So, oh, I'm just so psyched that Jessica was able to come on and talk about that because, I mean, two sets of twins? Come on, you guys, seriously. So if you have a friend who's been sort of hemming and hawing about doing their first race, whatever the distance is, I would highly recommend that you share this episode with them because who better to explain that it can be done than a mom of five kids and someone who has run their first 50K. So send this on, share it, tweet it out, do whatever you do. I'm not even on Twitter, but I think that's still a thing. So doors to the She Runs Ultras membership are going to open again at the end of September. And right now we're working on a lot of different things in there. We've got so many women who are working towards their first or their farthest 50K. But if you love this podcast, if you are a member of my Run Your First 50K Facebook group, but you're looking for more, like more community, more support, more accountability, more help and resources, both just general resources that will help you map out your progression from where you are to where you want to go, as well as one-on-one coaching from me, then I would highly recommend that you go to SheRunsUltras.com and put your name on the waitlist so that you'll be notified. You'll be, those people that are on the waitlist are going to get first crack at signups when that happens at the end of September, beginning of October. I haven't picked in a specific date yet, but you guys will be the first to know. And that is actually going to be where the next round of Run Your First 50K takes place, inside the container of the membership, because it just gives me more opportunity to connect with you guys. I had the experience the other day of doing a one-on-one call with a woman who joined the membership, and she was like, I feel like I know you. And that is so amazing and kind of like a weird concept for me because you guys all know me, but I don't yet have the benefit of knowing you. So the membership has been this really cool place where I can now get to know everybody on a more in-depth level and give more personalized coaching and like see it through, like see the process through with you, which is like the most gratifying thing for me. So if that's a place you think that you want to come and hang out, go to SheRunsUltras.com and get your name on the wait list, and I will email you when doors are getting ready to open so you'll have first crack at a spot. If you haven't already today, go do your daily shakedown, check your watch, check your steps, get out there and do just a little something that's going to contribute to your training, short term and long term. That's all for this episode, you guys. Enjoy this beat and I'll see you all soon. Thank you.